Blog Talk Radio.
Friends, and welcome to The World Transformed. This program is your guide to an astounding future that lies ahead, one that will be here sooner than you think, and one that you have an important role to play in bringing about. At The World Transformed, we want to introduce you to what may be the greatest transformation of them all, the one that begins with considering and acting on the almost limitless possibilities that lie before us, and that ends somewhere beyond the reach of the human imagination. So, when does this amazing future begin? Well, today is the day. My name is Phil Bauermaster, and with me in the virtual studio is my co-blogger, co-futurist, and co-host, Stephen Gordon. Hello, Stephen.
Hey, Phil. How are you?
Well, I am super fantastic. Happy Tuesday. How are you, my friend?
Yeah, it's not our normal night, is it? We normally kick off our week of broadcast. Excellence. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday are our normal nights. But, this week we're doing a Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday. So.
I'll tell you why. The kids were on fall break last week, and I was in Moab for a good portion of last – Moab, Utah, good portion of last week.
Yeah.
By the way, everyone, go to Moab, okay, if you get a chance. That's my recommendation of the week for vacations, but I had a fantastic time. What a great place. And just never got caught up. So, I've been running about a day late on everything, and, it all catches up here.
And I would say it's also my fault as well in that, kid home from college over the weekend. It was kind of a long weekend for him. And quite frankly, I had a good time fishing over the weekend with it. So, we just didn't get it quite together to do the Monday night show. So,
I guess we're saying we've been having fun with our families and we took a day. Okay. hope you all are okay with that. But we're back and we're doing three shows this week. So it's not like.
I guess that most of our audience now, Phil, I've been looking at the numbers. Most of our audience does it on, listens on demand. I'm hopeful this hasn't put a kink in, too many of our listeners' normal listening schedule. So.
Yeah, but if it's a big problem for you, just let Stephen know, because I think he just puts the blame for the whole thing.
So. That's right.
He's the guy to go to on this. But hey, we got a great week, and we got a great one to kick off here. The show is called HI plus AI. Are we becoming our own robot overlords? And of course, HI is human intelligence, AI, artificial intelligence, and that'll be the third or might be fourth story that we're going to be delving into here this evening. But basically, we're talking about the confluence of human and machine and the different ways that the two are meeting up. And you had found some interesting news stories for this week, and I found at least one other that kind of relates to this. And where it's all heading is, the lines are increasingly blurred, aren't they?
That's right, and it's not just in one direction. It's not just that humans are robots are becoming more human, and humans, it's both, right? I mean, there's we got some examples. Probably just best to get into them.
Let's just jump right in. We'll start with a robot that does something that humans do that I would never have thought that you wanted to make a robot do. The headline
right.
is, "This robot can do more push-ups because it sweats." Immediately start thinking, well, do we have to give robots human weaknesses? Do we have to give them human foibles? It seems like sweating is, what we have to do because we get overstrained, but a robot is perfectly smooth, cool, operating machine that it can operate at its limits and not have to worry about it. How could it possibly be advantageous to have a robot that sweats? Is this really a good idea?
It appears so. Whenever anything, whenever anything moves, right, heat is a byproduct of movement, and and it happens in our muscles.
Yep.
And when we work out, or or doing physical labor, we got to, you get past a certain point, you're going to have to cool off. And the way the body deals with this, one of the ways, is by sweating. And and it has kind of a double action. You know, number one, some of the heat is in the sweat, but also the evaporation of the sweat takes so much of the heat away. And it turns out that you know, heat is a problem with robots as well. So and you know, there's a number of ways they can go about taking care of that. You know, and one of them is fans and things like that. But that's it's not efficient. It's it takes up a lot of energy, and systems like that tend to be heavy, and liquid cooling is even more so heavy. So turns out this may be a way for robots that, you know, that have to do significant work to cool off as well. So this is interesting.
You know, you got to follow the link, folks, and just watch the video of the robot doing the straight up push-ups. That's interesting to watch anyway. But this idea just goes to show you that there are certain, as John Spart has explained the term to us, developmental optima, right? There's good directions that it seems that evolution or biological development, or in this case, mechanical development will take you. And one of them is, hey, you know what? If you're going to be doing this kind of stuff, water cooling works, right? I mean, it just
right.
It does. It works in our bodies. And if you're creating a body that's doing the same kinds of things, that's about the same size, turns out that system works there too. It shouldn't be a big surprise, but it's just funny when you see it. Ah, the sweating robot, you know, because you can't help but think of other biological functions, you know, is it going to burp? Is it going to do even less, you know, savory things? Maybe.
Well, my thought is, Phil, you know, you said this is, you know, a foible. You could perhaps make the robot, you know, sweat, smell like strawberries. You know, you don't have to, it doesn't have to, you know, it doesn't have to smell bad. Yeah, you can.
No, it's,
that's
it's
one thing you could do.
Could literally be strawberry Kool-Aid, right? I mean, you could. Like,
that's right. I mean, you know, you could. it could be something that's not unpleasant at all to be around. So
yeah.
Whatever.
Or maybe a nice lukewarm tea would probably make more sense because it's going to be kind of warm. But yeah.
Earl Grey, hot.
You know, so there it is. It's like in this instance, what we're seeing is robots taking on interesting human characteristics that we wouldn't have thought of. But that's definitely the, you know, the inflection point. Robots becoming more like us, and it's only natural that they would. We're trying to make them look like us. You know, at least their shape. We're trying to make them move the way we do. That's the real trick, I think. And we're getting really good at that. So yeah, when we see them doing a lot more of the kinds of you know, you would think almost ancillary supporting, you know, functions that we have, it shouldn't come as a surprise at all. In some instances, they'll definitely improve on those kinds of functions. But in some, I think it's going to end up looking a lot like us.
You know, it's interesting how long it took to get a bipedal robot that, you know, could walk normally. Just the action of walking on 2 feet, it's almost a controlled fall. It took a long time for them to get that right, but they're, you know, and they're still working on it. But you remember, you know, how neat it was to see this probably 15 years ago now, a SEMO, was a Honda robot, and how big of a deal that was. And then they got him jogging and, you know, running upstairs and everything else. It's kind of neat to see how fast they moved once they began to be a solved problem. They moved quick on it.
Yeah, and Boston Dynamics has really done some amazing stuff with that. And I don't know if you've seen the YouTube video, The Cursing Robot.
No, I guess I haven't.
It's just video of a Boston Dynamics robot being put through his paces. They did a voiceover of him talking as it's happening, and it's just hilarious. Not safe for work.
Safe for kids. Huh?
Yeah, but it's hilarious.
Put the kids to bed and
enjoy
play.
Yes. Exactly.
All right.
Okay, well, let's move on. We've got several of these, and our last one's kind of a big one. So here's one we're going to be talking about again on tomorrow's show, on Wednesday's show. But the headline is, in a medical first, brain implant allows paralyzed man to feel again. So here we're kind of going in the opposite direction. Here we're taking robotics or robotic-type components, putting them inside a human, and restoring function to a human body. This is an amazing story.
No, let me ask Phil. This is not him feeling with his own hands, is it? Is he feeling with a prosthetic?
Exactly. Scientists have helped a paralyzed man experience the sense of touch in his mind-controlled robotic arm. Okay.
Yeah.
So basically, we're talking about. I mean, you know, it's already remarkable that we know that implants can restore nerve activity to damaged tissues, and potentially people can feel again within their own limbs. This is the next step, right? This is,
right.
Okay, well, there's no limb there. He's got a prosthetic limb. And so they put feeling into the prosthetic limb, okay? Basically, what you've got here is electrodes smaller than a grain of sand implanted into the sensory cortex of the brain, keyed to sensors on the hand, and, you know, you're feeling then with that hand in much the same way you would with a biological hand. Who can say qualitatively how the two compare? I guess he could.
He could if he had that hand before, right?
Yeah.
And I'm sure he did. That's remarkable, just absolutely remarkable. It's we're getting closer and closer to the bionic man of our youth, right? Right, Phil. I mean, this is very cool.
It is, and you know, if we were also doing a virtual reality show this week, I would bring this one into that too, right? Because you don't think of it that way, but up to this point, we've always thought of sensing, right, as something that occurs. You know that it goes on in your brain, but you can't help but think that your sense of touch occurs in the part of your body that's experiencing it, right? That your sense of feeling is in your hand, right? If you lay your hand down, you know, on the desk in front of you, or you pick something up with it, you're feeling it there. But it's actually all really going on in your brain. It's one thing to know that intellectually. It's another thing to see work like this being done and realize that it truly is something that happens inside the brain, because, you know, this is a robot hand, right? And he's feeling via a robot hand. It's almost hard to overstate the significance of that. I mean, it's got kind of big philosophical implications, doesn't it?
It does. And you know, we've kind of had this kind of bet between you and I, Phil. I forget which side each of us took, but you know, whether it would be the Luke Skywalker hand, you know, whether we get that first or we get the ability to grow back a hand. Okay.
Right.
This is like a score one for the Luke Skywalker hand. This is kind of
score one for the Luke Skywalker hand. But I'll tell you what, we got news about potentially growing a hand that we'll be talking about tomorrow. So let's save that one, because
that actually
is one of the other interesting areas of accelerating medical technology that we'll be looking at. So if you start feeding those sensations into the brain, in this case via, you know, sensors that are actually feeling something, what that says to me is you could also feed those sensations into the brain without the sensors. Right. So something approaching true virtual reality starts to take shape, starts to be outlined here, because I think the real one day virtual reality interfaces are going to go to the brain. Right. We're going to see things, you know, via our optic nerve. We're going to feel things via our nervous system, and virtual reality will be indistinguishable to us from real reality, because we're gonna get it through the same interface that we get real reality, which is to say through our brain. And this, you know, which is such a tremendous step forward for people with prosthetics, also has that implication. It speaks to the idea of taking human experience, physical, you know, palpable experience, and turning it into data, and making that data something that a person can, you know, experience in as real a way as they would if the hand was there. It's a remarkable story all the way around.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And I think you know, when you look at the merger of humans and machines, this is taking another big chunk of humanity, you know, of the human experience, and, you know, not giving the machine complete control over it, but kind of putting it into that realm, isn't it?
It is, and it's again, it is, in a way, us merging with machines, and yeah. so it's uh, and to the extent, and here's the thing, we will not do this necessarily because, you know, it's that, you know, we just want to be a machine. We'll do it for purposes of improving our lives. And, you know, the paraplegic is going to do it because, you know, to be able to feel is preferable, even if it's not exactly like, you know, it was before his accident. It's preferable to not being able to feel at all. And so we take these steps to improve lives, and it's remarkable.
Absolutely. Wonderful stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, so our next story, talk about one of our favorite topics here. Deep learning is going to teach us all the lesson of our lives, jobs are for machines. Now, we've obviously talked about this many times, but I like the emphasis on deep learning in this piece that we've linked here. And if you read it, one of the things I would draw your attention to is a paragraph, I don't know, it's about a third of the way in maybe, talking about work. All work can be divided into four types: routine and non-routine, cognitive, and manual. Okay, so everything we do that's work fits into one of those categories. Now, machines have already gotten a really good handle on a lot of routine tasks, right? I mean, there's a good deal of routine and even now non-routine work, like driving a car, that a machine can do. Where we're going to see this big leap forward, powered by deep learning, is in the cognitive tasks, right? Manual tasks are going to be kind of the final frontier. You know, having a robot sophisticated enough to do everything that you know, we were talking about how hard it is to learn to walk, right? It's really hard to learn to do things like paint a painting and, you know, things like that. You know, the really kind of fine, detailed things that human beings can learn, but that are still very difficult, very complex tasks for a machine to take on. But it's coming. The story we've linked here starts out talking about how Go has been mastered by deep learning systems. We talked about that earlier in the year, the game Go. And it's just a signpost on the way to basically any human activity, any human work in any of the four categories becoming a solved space, right? Becoming a game that a computer can play better than we can play it. And at that point, everything that we have ever thought of as work belongs to the machines, not to us. And we have a new role to play at that point. And what that role will be is somehow feeding into that process of work, you know, somehow supervising it, inspiring it, guiding it, having a lot of it just done for us. But all of those tasks sooner or later, and at the rate we're going, it'll probably be sooner, end up in the machine sphere, don't they?
They do. I was at I texted you a picture last week, Bill. I was in a continuing legal education class. We have to do that every year. Stay current. And the subject of technology came up, and they showed a slide. It was a robot shaking hands with a human, and it said legal jobs are safe for now, it appears.
Right.
Well, yeah, you know, my thought is really the cognitive jobs are more you know in danger than the, you know, the guy that's flipping burgers, I think, to some extent. Ultimately all jobs could be handled by machines, but it seems like you know, a large portion of not just, you know, legal jobs, but, you know, medicine, everything. We, you know, Watson's going to medical school, guys. So
right.
So it's something you know, you have to consider what will be our purpose at that point. You know, you have to have a reason to get up in the morning. You have to, and you know, hopefully we'll all develop you know, reasons for, you know, that are fun. I guess is, you know, perhaps we just pursue leisure at that point. I'm not quite sure.
I'm not sure either, but we need to be, you know, we need to be thinking about it. This is a great time to be kind of planning for that and laying out scenarios for how it will work. And what I'd really like to see, although I even hate to mention the presidential election because I feel like that gets discussed all too much. But I would really like to see public discourse including this. I'd be so excited if there was somebody running for president who talked about this happening, because it is going to be a huge transition for this country. It's going to be a huge transition for every country in the world and
right.
for the whole global economy as this occurs. And it would be great if people were, you know, if people would think about this a little bit, that'd be great, you know, because it is coming fast. And I think we're going to be more in a mode of reacting to it and running away from it and trying to, you know, put sandbags off to stop the flood than engaging with it in a creative way. And that's too bad because we know enough now to see it coming. And this would be a great time to, you know, to really just take a few steps towards understanding what we need to do to make society work, right? We're taking one of the pillars of how our economy works, one of the big pillars of how our economy works and really how our whole society is structured, and it's gone, right? Then what happens? Well, that's a good question. And we've talked about it many times. Obviously, we're not going to solve it tonight. But one of the things we could be doing is engaging AI to help us think up scenarios for how we deal with this, right?
Right.
You know, creatively plan what our new world is going to look like. But I don't know. I don't see him doing it. Stephen, I think you're going to have to run for president so we can get this on the
exactly. And what we'll end up doing is we'll end up taxing these things, right? We'll tax the robots, you know, and that's how we'll all survive, I think. So we'll tax the robots at near 100%, just enough to allow them to be maintained, I guess.
Right.
And redistribute that to humans.
Put more water in their sweat glands, if you will.
Exactly, and you know, fix whatever is broken, and keep at it. You know, perhaps that's what we do. You know.
But where I'm hopeful is when I read a piece like this. This last one we're going to talk about, which you had linked, it was over on TechCrunch. The combination of human and artificial intelligence will define humanity's future, and that's where we got our title for tonight's show, HI plus AI. And, you know, I added the joke, are we becoming our own robotic overlords, right? I think, you know, that there's the possibility that we are, that the real future, both for HI and for AI, is about collaboration. It's about us becoming more intelligent because we're working with these AIs. It's about these AIs becoming more effective because they're being directed to ends that that make sense and that we've thought about it and that can bring about the best bang for the buck.
I can tell you that I work very differently now than I did when I started as an attorney 20 years ago. Okay, I mean, it's just the computer systems that I use that keep me, you know, I can go through an entire day, Phil, without touching a paper file. And, you know, to me, that's a good day, you know, because I'm much more productive because I'm going from task to task, file to file, you know, so quickly that, I mean, you know, I'd need an army of assistants to hand me things as fast as I'm scrolling through things. I'm at least an order of magnitude more effective the way I do things now than the way I did it 20 years ago. 10 times better. 10 times better.
Wow. So you're like 10 lawyers.
10 1997 lawyers. Yeah.
Oh, right. Yeah, that's the thing. Everybody else is like 10 lawyers too now. Right?
Yeah, everybody else is everybody else that's, you know, and a few of the old timers are still trying to do it the old way and you know, they're finding that the young guys are running circles around them, and so it's kind of interesting. These guys in their 60s and 70s are, you know, going to these CLE conferences and taking these tech courses and doing everything they can to get up to speed. And for them, it's like learning a foreign language. And you know, for those who grew up around this stuff, it's you're almost operating as a native in it. And it's and guys that are, you know, and women that are younger than me have it easier even than I have. So it's just, and you know how your kids are, Phil. You know, you hand them an iPhone, and they're playing games like inside of 30 seconds. They figure it out.
Unlocking features I didn't know were there. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. It's funny to watch, actually.
It's amazing. One of the areas that gets discussed in this article, which highly recommend everyone read this, is self-driving cars. This is kind of one of the inflection points of the collaboration between human and artificial intelligence. And they talk about this question of ethics. I'm going to read just a little bit piece here because I think this is really interesting. Engineers are now programming cars using subtle ethics models to determine in situations where an accident is unavoidable whether to hit pedestrians or veer off the road and jeopardize the driver's life. We've talked about this.
Yeah.
The next paragraph, the conclusions such cars reach in real situations might well be very different from the decisions you or I might make if we were in the driver's seat. But with hindsight, we might judge them to be much better, even if they initially seem alien to us. Ideally, such technologically evolved decision-making abilities can flourish alongside evolving human intelligence to rethink assumptions, reframe possibilities, and explore new territory. To me, this is, that really captures the idea that,
we can be better people, Phil, than we would be without the machines.
Right.
You know, if you think about it, I sitting here today, if you ask me, Stephen, if you were faced with a situation where your car, goes haywire or whatever, and it looks like it's veering into a crowd of people, would you instead of if you had the choice between the crowd of people where you would be fine, but you would hurt a lot of people, or you plow into a concrete pylon, which would probably kill you, which would you take? And in my heart of hearts, I would want to say, right, well, the pylon,
right,
right. That's the right thing to do. That's what I would want to do. But you put me in that situation, and my and it's just my animal brain that makes a reaction, and I would hope that I'd choose the pylon. And if it's a machine in charge, it would, right? So maybe it's better that the machine is in charge.
And if you take that same idea and you apply it broader to what I was talking about before, which is this idea that maybe collaboratively with the AIs, we'll get a better handle on what happens to our economy next, right? And really, what happens to our world next,
right?
Part of the quick way to getting to good solutions might be letting them take over the wheel occasionally. It's a scary thought for people even around cars. Much scarier when you talk about how you run the country or how you run the world. But in fact, if we are going to become our own robot overlords, we might do so with some nudging and with by occasionally letting the robots actually be our robot overlords. It's a scary thought, but not when you see it in that context, the context of making ourselves smarter by taking on intelligence that we could not generate on our own. And I think that's ultimately the real leap forward that AI plus HI or HI plus AI represents. And can you believe it? With that, we're out of time. How did that happen so quickly? Well, we could have talked about this all night, but
That one TechCrunch article, everybody should go read it. There's really a week's worth of material in there. I honestly thought about just making the entire week about that one article. But hey, there's so much other good stuff that we'll move on tomorrow night with accelerating medical technologies. So
we're going to do that tomorrow night. Do read that TechCrunch article, and of course, we'll be talking about these issues more in the future. Thanks, Stephen. It's been great talking with you. Thank you all for being with us. We will be back tomorrow with a brand new show about accelerating medical technology. And until next time, live to see it.